Will the House please come to order? Members, please indicate their presence by voting. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk please announce the quorum.
There are 28 members present, Mr. Speaker.
We do have a quorum. Father Peter Gorgeous will lead us in invocation this morning. Please rise.
Let us pray. O God, we come before you today with the song of the ancients on our lips. I will enter his gates with thanksgiving in my heart, and I will enter his courts with praise. For these next few months, these are the courts where you would have us serve your people. You have given us a splendid land with unlimited resources. Give us the wisdom to legislate for the people of that land with the best possible use of our limited talents. We ask this in the name of Jesus, your Son. Amen.
Mr. Majority Leader, would you lead us in the pledge, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread on the journal.
Without objection, so ordered. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that we move down the calendar to unfinished business.
Is there objection? Hearing none. Representative Gusendorf.
Mr. Speaker, after polling the members of the Rules Committee at this time in accordance with the Uniform Rules, Rule Number 3, we'd like to submit the name of Irene Cashin as the Chief Clerk of the House.
So that's a nomination, and I can assume that you've asked for unanimous consent for that nomination.
Move and ask unanimous consent that nominations be closed.
So there are no other nominations, so in the tradition of Representative Cato, I will announce that the body has voted unanimously in favor of Irene Cashin as our Chief Clerk once again. We are back on the regular order of business, and now we can ask the Chief Clerk to certify as to the correctness of the previous day's journal and of the correctness of the journal for the 120th day of the 15th legislature.
As Chief Clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 120th day of the 15th legislature and its supplements, and also for the 16th legislature for the first day.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal for the 120th day of the 15th legislature and the first day of the 16th legislature be approved.
Hearing no objection, so ordered. That brings us to introduction of guests. Are there guests to be introduced today? Representative Sherry Davis.
It went on, it went off. Mr. Speaker, over in Gallery B, I have a couple of very dear friends of mine I'd like to introduce to the body. Carl Rose is the Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. And Steve McFeeters is the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators.
Are there other guests for introduction? This brings us to messages from the governor.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the other house?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Other communications?
There are none, Mr. Speaker.
Are there other bills or resolutions for introduction?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
All right, we don't have a daily calendar, so we are back at unfinished business at this point. Mr. Martin?
Mr. Speaker, if I may, I'd like to move that unanimous consent that prayer be spread on the journal for the day.
I think that's been taken care of, but thank you, Mr. Martin. Under unfinished business, there are a couple other appointments to be made today. The chair will at this time appoint the following members to the Legislative Council: Representative Mike Davis, Chairman; Representative Cotton, Navarre, Grusendorf, Davidson, Zawacki, and Collins. To the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, the House will have the vice chairmanship this year, and that person would be Representative Kay Wallace as the vice chairman. Additionally, Representatives Larson, Hoffman, and Mike Davis, and Representative Phillips, and the alternate from the House will be Representative Kay Brown. The Ethics Committee would be chaired by Representative Mike Davis, Representative Swack Swackhammer, and Representative Walt Furness will also serve on that committee. And I still haven't, we're not prepared to make the appointments to the Regulation Review Committee, although Representative Peter Gall will be chairman. Is there any other unfinished business? Are there announcements? Mr. Majority Leader?
Mr. Speaker, I have an announcement from SBS. For anybody who hasn't signed up for SBS, you have to re-sign up this year. And if you haven't done it, they've extended it till Friday of this week, and I've had distributed a memo that Mike Davis had from Terry Kramer that articulates that. If you haven't signed up, you have to sign up by this Friday, or you don't have any benefits.
Thank you. I've got another. Oh, Mr. Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On Friday, in the Butrovich room at noon, we will be having the first meeting of the Children's Caucus.
I've been asked to announce that letters of disclosure of financial interest between public officials and conflict of interest statements will be printed in the Journal supplement on the fifth day, which is this Friday. And I am led to believe that that means that we have to have our forms filled out and turned in by the fifth legislative day, which is this Friday. Are there other announcements? Okay, I'll accept at this point, unless there are other announcements or other unfinished business, a recess motion till I believe you're going to ask for 6:50. And at that point, the governor will be giving a State of the State address. And again, ask members to please be on time.
Speaker, could we first have a very brief at ease?
We are at ease. Back to order, please. I'm reminded that we failed to send a delegation to the other body to inform them that we were organized and ready to do business. And I'm also reminded that they do not convene until 11 a.m., so at an appropriate time after 11 a.m., would Representatives Ulmer and McLean please inform the Senate that the House is organized, ready to do business, and anxious to work with the other body. I would appreciate that. Representative Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Under committee announcement, the House Hess Committee will meet tomorrow morning for our kickoff meeting. Our guest will be Commissioner Myra Munson and division heads for a policy and budget review of the department's initiatives and priorities for the coming year, and we'll be meeting once again in Capitol 106 at 8:30 a.m.
Other announcements, Mr. Majority Leader?
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House stand in recess until 6:50 p.m. tonight.
Is there objection? So ordered. We're in recess.
It's become customary for governors to use the State of the State message as a laundry list for the consideration of the legislature. The State of the State has often been used, and very successfully, to reach out to a broad range of interests in the sort of coalition building that is such a time-honored and legitimate part of governing in a democracy. But this year, in order to bring our energies into focus on a problem that's been with us too long, it seemed best to dispense with tradition. Instead, I want to use this opportunity to present a single modest proposal that we adopt in stages over the next 2 years, a fiscal plan for state government. Over the last 10 years, modest proposals haven't sold all that well in Alaska. Not heroic enough, I guess. When realism prevails over flatulent rhetoric, you get slow news days. But if there was ever a time for real life in Alaska, this is it. This is the time. Over the years in Alaska, we've adopted the mythology of the lone individual living independently in the wilderness. The original people in the wilderness, the natives, didn't practice excessive individualism. Instead, they banded together in groups. That was necessary because life in the Arctic was more risky than life further south. Working together, the members of the group made careful, flexible plans because things could change very quickly, and for them, quick adaptation was often the difference between life and death. In judging an acceptable level of public sector activity, it might be useful to think of state government as providing a support system for living in the far north. In every Arctic society, government has an important role. People who depend on each other need an institutional way to make sure that happens. And of course, there's so much ground, so much water, and so much country for which we are responsible. In a lot of ways, we're on our own in Alaska. Our natural markets are in the Pacific Rim rather than the domestic United States. The rest of the nation often treats us in a discriminatory way when it thinks about us at all. That means that we need to establish long-term direction for ourselves in the certain knowledge that any plan will have to be frequently revised depending on unforeseen events. That's what the prosperous and successful Asian countries do. That's what we're going to have to do also if we expect Alaska to have any significant part in the world of the 21st century. The logical place to start this process is by deciding on a state fiscal plan. Although candidates of all persuasions have stated the need for such a plan for at least 10 years, nothing much has been done beyond name-calling and the artful dodging of any specifics. My own assessment of our current situation is that dodge as we might, the bullet will still wind up between our upper and lower incisors. Initially, a couple of points need to be made. First, the public sector has really taken a beating politically over the last few years. At a time when other nations are moving ahead by understanding the role of government as a tool for progress in America and in Alaska, the public sector and the private sector act like warring tribes. There is only one system. It includes the public and the private. I don't care how many two-bit demagogues tell you otherwise, your government is not your enemy. Even though mistakes have been made, the truth is that the state of Alaska has helped the lives of its citizens over the last 30 years. The second point is this. Sometimes we need to be reminded that Alaska owns the oil fields at Prudhoe Bay and Kuparuk. And that the oil companies have a conditional right obtained from us by contract to take the oil out. The industry needs to be credited for its many contributions to the state, but the fact is that the companies are here as contractors for us. In spite of the prevailing mythology, in Alaska, our lives are extensively controlled by decisions that are made elsewhere. Besides a broad range of natural disasters, our future is affected by commodity prices, transportation costs, currency fluctuation, communications technology, U.S. government decisions, national defense needs, and the shifting winds of trade policy. All that makes Alaska an exciting place to be, but it also makes things inherently unstable. That instability hurts both the economy and society at large. The services and benefits provided by the state help our people out during hard times, and they provide a cushion against wild fluctuations in the marketplace. In this anarchy of events, it is necessary for state government to be a stabilizing influence. In order to promote that stability, I propose that we retain our current level of benefits and services, and that we do what is necessary to pay for them. I have to admit that the concept of paying for government has fallen on evil times lately. Certainly at the federal level, very little has been done to reinforce the idea that you have to pay for what you get. Some people say it won't be long before foreign bankers will be dictating austerity terms to the United States government in the same way as the Wall Street bankers do to third world countries. I suppose if that happens, there will be some final judgments made on supply-side economics, the application of which caused the $3 trillion federal budget deficit. In any event, we Alaskans have to balance our state budget every year by law. Unlike the federal government, we can't borrow money for operating expenses. Smart people don't borrow for operating expenses anyway, whether it's legal or not. While it is true that many of our benefits and services came into being in a random way, without too much thought about the implications of the mix on our society as a whole, it is also true that the people of Alaska have come to depend on those benefits and services, and that most, if not all, can be easily justified on their own merits. Seen as a single and formless budget number, the total is often regarded as excessive. But looking at each constituent part of state government tells a different story. Benefits and services that are demanded by the people that we are sworn to represent. Last week on the C-SPAN, I watched a national political pollster explain a poll that he had taken throughout this nation. He said that a huge majority of those who responded wanted to balance the federal budget, as they should have. He also said, however, that when the various parts of the budget were presented as candidates for reduction so that the budget might be balanced, a majority of those same respondents wanted to raise every single category without exception. I had to laugh because I had seen the very same results in Alaska a couple of months earlier. Remember that retaining the current level of benefits and services is not necessarily the same as keeping the cost of government at the level where it is today. In its essence, government is an information machine. It passes information on to those who make decisions, and the decision makers then pass instructions down the line accordingly, issuing this permit, approving that payment, setting this fish harvest level. It stands to reason that efficiencies in government can be gained through the intelligent use of information technology. At the moment, however, the state's personnel system is so rigid that most management efficiencies cannot be adopted until those laws are changed. In order to begin assessing those changes, I will ask you to appropriate a sum of money for a first-rate systems advisor who will work with the state's best managers in identifying new organizational structures which will be able to take full advantage of available technology so that the state government eventually can do more with less. To initiate the long-term fiscal planning process, I will be submitting to you later this week not only the FY 1990 budget at approximately $2.3 billion, but legislation requiring the legislature to adopt a specific 5-year budgeting plan by resolution and a 20-year fiscal projection each year. The 5-year plan and the 20-year projection would be revised each year as a part of the budget process. An outline of my proposed 20-year projection is attached to copies of this speech, which will be available at the end of it. For the next 5 years, paying for our services and benefits will require the following actions or variations thereof. This year, I propose that we make a reasonable revision of the so-called economic limit factor, that we pass a statewide sales tax of 1% to help pay for the revenue sharing money appropriated by the state to the municipalities, that we raise gasoline taxes by 8 cents per gallon to defray the cost of road maintenance, and that we utilize the undistributed income of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation as necessary to balance our accounts. Also this year, I will urge that the Rail Belt Energy Fund be renamed the Rail Belt Investment Fund, and that it be utilized in ways that are calculated to lead to economic activity in the Rail Belt area. It's just coincidence that the Rail Belt area, which has a large fund for energy subsidies, is also the area which has been hardest hit economically over the last 2 years. In all honesty, I don't think we can make the construction boom come back or pick up the tab for the real estate deals that went sour. But we need to invest in Alaska, where that investment is likely to bring us permanent economic activity. The Rail Belt Investment Fund should be divided among the several Rail Belt communities in an equitable way over a 2-year period, $80 million this year and $80 million next year, with the balance to be deposited in the Alaska Science and Technology Foundation. The investments should be made in ways that have the best chance of paying off in terms of permanent jobs for the hard-hit citizens of the Rail Belt. Research labs, improved port facilities, build-ready airport sites, tourist facilities, and better access roads come immediately to mind. I am ready to work with all of you and with the municipal governments to identify appropriate uses for this fund. This year, I will also ask you for authority to place before the voters in 1990 the education amendment to the Alaska Constitution, which would place 40% of the permanent fund's earnings back into the fund for 20 years. After 10 years, the income from the education amendment will be used to fund public education. That means that after the oil money has come and gone, the education of our children will be a sure thing. The education amendment is a manifestation of an idea that once had strong currency in Alaska, that the fortune of Prudhoe Bay ought to be shared with the Alaskans of the future. Of all the public services we provide, none is so critical as the education of Alaska's children. The education amendment will assure that we have the money to make good on that obligation in the future, regardless of the status of oil production. Now, here's the good news. Next year, I expect to introduce a state income tax and an appropriation of 20% of the earnings of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation to defray the cost of state government. When a tax is necessary, the income tax is the least objectionable kind. People who are most able to pay bear a greater proportion of the burden. If you're not working, you don't pay. An income tax is deductible from federal tax, meaning that Uncle Sam shares the bill, and non-resident workers will have to pay for some of the public services that benefit them. Lastly, every citizen has a direct financial stake in his or her own government. I'd like to comment on the proposed use of part of the permanent fund's earnings from the perspective of a long personal involvement in the fund's evolution. No matter what the latter-day experts tell you, when the fund was created, it was clearly understood that some part of its earnings would be used to help pay for the expenses of government when the oil money began to run out. The Constitution specifically provides that the legislature shall decide how to use the earnings of the permanent fund. The earnings are not sacred. They are there to be used intelligently by each generation of Alaskans. Judged by that standard, 20% of the earnings is an intelligent proportion to devote to the support of public services. The revenue measures I propose tonight are moderate. The proposed income tax places us 28th in per capita terms of the 44 states that have such a tax. We'd be 45th of the 46 states with sales taxes, while we'd be jumping from 47th to 13th in gasoline taxes. Many other states are moving to increase theirs as well, and chances are that by the end of 1989, we'd be somewhere around the middle of the pack. Considering the permanent fund dividend, most Alaska families would still receive a lot more from the state than they pay out. And it appears that we can balance the budget this way until 1995, and even out beyond 20 years if we make assumptions that allow for some reasonable optimism. Specifically, I think we are entitled to assume, for the purposes of the 20-year projection, that a natural gas pipeline will be completed in 1995 or 1996, and that the Anwar will come online in late 1997 with a field a little less than half the size of Prudhoe Bay. In addition, the education amendment revenue begins to phase in after the turn of the century. Of course, the Anwar, once leased, may prove not to have much oil in it. For that matter, the dollar may strengthen against the yen, which raises the price of our resources on the markets. The sheikhs may drive oil prices up to $25 or drive them down to $5. In the meantime, there will be floods, earthquakes, mudslides, volcanic eruptions, and fires. Life in Alaska is risky, and we have to learn to live with that risk as best we can. The purpose of my proposal here today is to initiate a process which will get the most important revenue and spending questions settled and allow us to move on to other topics, which are, if anything, more important. At the moment, Alaska's public policy debates are paralyzed by a seeming inability to come to grips with simple mathematics. Over the next year and a half, all Alaskans are welcome to take part in this important debate. But there's going to be an entry fee. To play a meaningful role, participants have to submit a fully operational plan. If you think the budget should be substantially reduced, you have to say specifically where. If you think paying taxes is an un-American activity, you have to say where else you'd get the money. If you think lightning will strike dead the first person to touch a penny of the permanent fund earnings, please explain in detail what you would do to make ends meet. When the dust settles, I'm confident that most people will find that these proposals that I've made tonight represent a common sense solution to the fiscal problems which have plagued us since 1986. Some years ago there was a saying, if you're not part of the solution, then you're part of the problem. Just so we'll all be part of the solution, I would ask that we convene as expeditiously as possible a budget summit made up of 3 members of the House, 3 members of the Senate, and myself. I suggest that the budget summit meet constantly until we work out the general outlines of a fiscal plan that takes into consideration both the short term and the long term. Then the details can be worked out through the hearing process. I look forward to working with you on the subjects which were discussed in this address and on the other important business which we have before us. Thank you for your attention.
Senator Binkley and Representative Foster, please escort the governor from the chambers. Without objection, the joint session is adjourned.
House is still in session. Where it is.
Outstanding. All right.